Welcome to the Real P3 Podcast, your ultimate resource for swine professionals worldwide. Join your host, Casey Bradley, dedicated industry advocate, as we delve deep into the world of swine production. Tune in for expert insights, cutting-edge strategies, and meaningful discussions tailored specifically to empower and elevate swine professionals. From optimizing nutrition plans to exploring innovative techniques and connecting with industry pioneers, the Real P3 Podcast is your go-to platform to stay ahead in the dynamic realm of swine production. Well, welcome, Tyler, to the Real P3. It's sure a treat to have you on here after seeing you graduate and enter the swine industry.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me today. I'm very excited to be able to have these conversations with you all.
Well, it's great. As you know, this is part of the Coffee and Careers in Animal Science pilot program, giving different graduate students the opportunity to kind of learn how to host and plan podcasts and, you know, how to interview and speak on that part and translate science into a different form of communication style. And it's really interesting because Tyler, Caitlin, is a graduate of our Coffee and Careers in Animal Science program. And I do believe you were an award winner. I think you won a prize at World Pork Expo a couple years ago. And it's really nice to have you. But Tyler, can you start us out? And then I'm going to turn this over to Caitlin as the host, just to give a brief background of yourself and where you have landed in the swine industry today.
Yeah, so to start out, I started with an undergraduate animal science degree at the University of Kentucky, where I was fortunate enough to start working at the swine research unit there as a research assistant in undergrad my sophomore year. And that kind of transformed and introduced myself to research and grew that passion, which then led me to complete a master's degree with Dr. Merlin Lindemann there at University of Kentucky. And that also just kept growing into a PhD, and things were going so well that I decided that's definitely the route I wanted it to go. So I stayed on, kept working as a graduate research assistant, having my hands in a multitude of everyone's projects, as well as some company-sponsored projects. And then about halfway to the end of my PhD, our manager at our research unit retired after 30-some years being there. So I stepped in and took over that role while I finished my PhD. And in that role, you know, I was responsible for daily care of our research herd, and it's a farrow to finish operation. So we were doing research on all production aspects, and being able to handle all that data and being responsible for all that gave me a really great experience. From that, I did finally finish my PhD, and then shortly after finishing that, I started here at Kalmbach Nutritional Services, where I'm the swine research manager, managing our production research at Kalmbach Feeds.
Well, that is so awesome. And Caitlin, I'll let you introduce the topic of the day and get started with the interview.
Yeah, so I know we've never had a conversation before besides via email, but I've heard a lot about you the last year, so I'm happy to get to have this conversation with you. So the topic for today is, of course, pig anemia. And I guess I'll just ask you what you identify as the primary challenge associated with anemia today in pig herds, and what factors do you think contribute to the increased prevalence?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a topic that's been around since pigs were moved from outdoor pasture base to indoor confinement. And, you know, it's not a new topic. I feel like coming into this industry, it was already a topic that seemed like had found solutions to deal and manage with it. But given that the advancements in, you know, genetic potential and where the industry is going and has gone into increasing litter size and growth rate of these piglets, This is a problem that's starting to come back up, and we're seeing it a lot more frequently. I really find overall, you look at it on a picture basis of weaning age. So if these pigs are an older weaning group, you're going to run into some problems. And then a lot of management aspects have to deal with iron deficiency, anemia. How often are we missing pigs? So these piglets are in the farrowing crate. How often are your people on farm missing pigs with the actual injection of iron? How frequent is the bottle of iron running out? You know, you could probably do only 7 or 8 liters with one bottle of iron. And if you're not cautiously watching, those bottles are dark tinted. They're hard to follow along to see where your levels are. How many pigs do we think we inject, but we don't actually get the iron in them? Or even so, how many pigs do we inject and half the injection runs out the side of the pig's neck? So things like that, I really think it's almost to a simple degree to fix it, but it does require, you know, labor and good management practices to make sure that employees and people in the barn are making sure that each pig is getting its adequate injection of iron.
I think those are really good points that I agree with. But besides management practices and maybe some environmental factors, do you think that, you know, there are, you know, some heavy genetic factors that play a role in susceptibility of anemia today, and maybe why it's maybe increasing today?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not a geneticist by all means, but you can just see, looking at the data over the years, the last several decades, just the litter size, for one, we're increasing. Our sows are putting out way more pigs than what they were putting out. And these sows are now having to provide more pigs with a base level of iron, or a reserve per se, at birth. So they're having to allocate more iron to each pig. As that is increasing, those amounts or those reserves are decreasing. As well as, like I mentioned earlier, the piglets are growing at a much faster rate, where blood volume is expanding. So we have to You have to think about this genetic potential and how fast these pigs are growing and the size change. And realistically, they're outgrowing that initial injection of iron. And then if you want to make matters worse, you take a couple extra days and add it to the weaning age. Those are a couple extra days that they are running low on iron. And then the transition between weaning and the nursery, you know, the first several days, the pigs aren't going to be consuming much of their feed, which will have plenty of iron in it. So there is somewhat of a gap there between the last several days before weaning in the farrowing crate, and then that period from weaning to the first 4 or 5 days of the nursery before the pigs really get started on feed.
Right. So in terms of sows, you kind of mentioned anemia and sows right there, but I have a question. Do you think that it's possible the condition is stemming from factors that aren't directly related to iron?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and I wish I could tell you a direct answer on that. But you know, there are definitely different nutrients that interfere with iron absorption and utilization even. There's some competitive inhibitors, and then there's also some enhancers that effectively help iron utilization. On the sow side, it's really hard to get into because then you talk about an older, mature animal, and, you know, can we feed our older sows more minerals and vitamins? We probably should. Are we? I mean, that's a good question to ask production systems. So, yeah, I do think there could be a problem with our nutrition status of our older parity sows. And looking at the pigs from the older parity sows would be a good way to start to address that problem.
Yeah, so do you know of any, I guess, trends or changes in the swine industry that's actually aimed at reducing the occurrence of anemia in sows right now? And do you know if they're, I guess, effective at all?
Yeah, I think the anemia in the sows is not a newer...
Let's take a quick break and hear from our founding partners, Swine Nutrition Management. Swine Nutrition Management is a consultancy service in South Africa, whereas pig nutritionists have a vision to provide customers with practical, up-to-date, and accurate nutritional information, which will add value to their farming enterprises by moving closer to unlocking the genetic potential of their animals. They develop tailored, cost-effective feeding programs for customers. Their approach is not to develop least cost, but rather best cost feed programs. By reviewing the entire cost structure of the farm, this includes a deep understanding of the production equation, which is driven by throughput, productivity, and feed efficiency. Now back to our episode.
A newer concept. However, I think it is starting to gain more awareness and people are starting to look at it further and say, oh, there actually may be a problem. And that kind of, I think, hits at where you're doing some work at South Dakota State. And we did some work while I was at UK on the south side, just trying to evaluate what these hemoglobin levels are in the sow. And then trying to relate their hemoglobin levels to the litter hemoglobin, or the number of pigs per litter, or the piglet growth rate. I think there's several different key measures there that you can look at and compare them across parity, across litter size, and really try to dig at the question, is it the older parity? Is it the thinner sows? Is it a combination, to try to address why or how can we get our sows to an appropriate iron status that also creates a piglet that has a decent iron status that we can get through with one injection only?
Tyler, I'm going to jump in here because I think this is a good point to ask this. You mentioned the synergistic attributes of some interactive minerals and things and some competitive or inhibitors of iron metabolism. Let's take a step back for the audience, and can you briefly discuss some of those in your work? Because you've done more than just iron with your research and minerals.
Yeah, so, you know, the synergistic effects or the inhibitors, when I'm referring to that, which is, it can get, you know, a little bit blurry because you're talking about injectable iron versus, you know, orally ingested iron from the feed. The injectable iron, I am not sure completely if there are inhibitors or synergistic effects or any of that going on. From my understanding, that is readily absorbed quite fast through the muscle and is ready to use and stored in tissues with it throughout the body. But then when you get into dietary iron and feed, you know, things like calcium and other divalent cations are competing in the gut for transporters. So you run into that problem. You run into phytate, which seems like a problem with other minerals and other nutrients. And you get on the vitamin side and you look at, you know, things like B12 and folate, which are key components to red blood cell production. So, you know, it might not be an iron aspect, but it might be a vitamin deficiency in preventing the red blood cell synthesis. And then you might have plenty of iron. In that case, you would look and you would see the mean corpuscular hemoglobin concentration would rise, but your red blood cell count's actually down. So essentially, your red blood cells are loaded with hemoglobin, but you're far and few between your red blood cells. And that's going to cause problems as well.
That definitely helps for the audience. And you went down the path I was hoping you would. But does that mean that we should look beyond hematocrit and other factors when we are considering this anemia issue?
Yeah, so hemoglobin and hematocrit are going to be your most common measures because they're easy to obtain. And the HemaQ device that seems like it's becoming more and more popular in the veterinary world. And that's what we use to measure hemoglobin concentration in our studies. That's a great tool, and it works really well, and it does tell you a lot. But when you can get the other blood panel measures, such as hematocrit or red blood cell count, mean corpuscular volume, mean corpuscular hemoglobin, those also help tie into to the story and let you further evaluate to whether it's an iron problem directly, or maybe it is a red blood cell production problem, and it's not tied to iron at all. So yeah, I do think a complex analysis is great when appropriate, but at the same time, doing research on a production level, hemoglobin is going to give you your iron status pretty effectively.
Sorry, Caitlin, I'll turn it back to you now.
Okay, so going back to the sows really quick, besides like piglet outcome and looking at relation between piglet hemoglobin and sow hemoglobin, I haven't seen a lot of studies done on directly looking at consequences on the sow in terms of her, you know, longevity and health and maybe cull rates or something like that. I guess, what do you think some consequences are from anemia that could be impacting the sow besides just piglet outcome?
Yeah, I definitely think there could be a lot, and I would take a holistic approach and almost want to look at everything. If you look at the curve, Glenn Allman and colleagues at NC State did a really good paper showing, you know, the trends of sows and their hemoglobin status throughout their whole reproductive cycle and across different parities. And it seems, looking back, if I remember correctly, that, you know, right after in the farrowing or the lactation period towards weaning, that's when you find sows have the lowest hemoglobin, which, you know, makes sense. They've just spent, you know, a lot of effort and a lot of energy in producing a healthy litter of pigs, as well as they've lost a lot of blood in giving birth. And they might not have had the amount of feed intake to recover some of that in a certain period of time. So I would be interested in seeing how that affects days to estrus. I think that can be confounded with, you know, feed intake and overall production measures. But, you know, a sow that has a lower hemoglobin level and maybe anemic is probably going to have a longer days to estrus, if I had to imagine. And, you know, she might have problems with, you know, lactation intake. She's probably not going to be eating as much because she has the loss of energy. She's anemic. So, you know, can we improve lactation feed intake by improving sow hemoglobin? These are questions that I've had, just haven't had the time to really gather the data and analyze it and look at it. But I think these are things that, you know, is it a simple iron problem in our sows, or is it a simple just mineral and vitamin nutritional status of the sow? How can we improve overall sow productivity but longevity through minerals and vitamins? And does it start and end with iron? Probably not, but I definitely do think iron is a big contributor.
So with the study you mentioned by Dr. Allman, do you know if he, if the sows that were tracked across parity, if they were the same sows across parity?
Yeah, they were not. And that really was one of the reasons, I think, for this multi-state study that I think you're a part of at South Dakota State. And then we did some stuff at University of Kentucky to look at that using the same sow, because I think that will tell a better picture and give us accurate representation of what it looks like per sow. And then you can tie back to that specific sow, her performance and her litter performance over several parities, and just follow those trends and see what that hemoglobin profile looks like throughout one or two reproductive cycles. And that's going to give you some answers or maybe some more questions, which is not always a bad thing, to find, is there an intervention? Can we supply her with more iron? Probably not necessarily in the feed, but maybe we can inject her with an injection of iron. And when to intervene. So like I said earlier, you know, maybe halfway through lactation, a shot of iron might go a long way. But the caveat to that is if you look at what we're giving the piglet, which if you take just simple math and a kilogram piglet at birth gets 200 milligrams and you put that on a sow scale and you have a 200 kilogram sow, I mean, you're talking about almost 200 milliliters of iron, and I just don't think that's going to work to inject into that sow. So, you know, I think there's got to be a lot of work on what the dose is for that animal, and we got to look at it because she's a much bigger animal. She's got a larger blood volume. But I think there could be potential in somehow giving her more iron throughout the process.
Right. So you've kind of touched on some of your opinions on this and some things that we've need to do and have not done. But I guess overall, as far as research gaps goes, what's the main area you think should be addressed in terms of both sow and piglet anemia?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's several things that I would love to see. And one is, you know, we get veterinarians to address the on farm hemoglobin levels. You know, it's not every farm that has the problem. It's probably going to be production systems that have an older weaning age and are very prolific and have a high growth rate and don't have as many disease challenges. So just get in the barn and take some of these hemoglobin samples, see if your pigs are levels that come close to iron deficient. And if so, you know, test out and see if giving them a second iron injection, that's going to be worth it. We recently just did a study and we showed quite a bit of growth, and that growth sustained through the nursery and all the way to market.
Now a word from the Sunswine Group. The Sunswine Group was founded in 2020 by Dr. Casey Bradley and developed a service-based company to fill in the gaps for agribusinesses, swine and poultry producers, and individuals alike. Our core business focuses on research and development, technical writing, and data analytics. However, this is all a catalyst for Dr. Bradley's passion to faithfully serve through science plus heart. This includes her mentoring programs such as Coffee and Careers in Animal Science and this podcast, The Real P3. And also her training and professional development programs that are now coming under the SunGrow brand. We hope to continue to grow through you, so contact us today at thesunswinegroup.com or on our social media channels, and let's sow the seeds of prosperity together.
And now back to our episode.
These pigs are going to go, you know, into the nursery at a lot better state than their counterparts who only got one injection. They're going to start on feed and be more active. They're going to run around the pen, go to the waters, go to the feed. And then, you know, systems that are shipping weaning pigs across state lines or several hours away and expecting them to get into the barn and start eating right away and taking off, you know, check the iron status. It might be worth it. On the sow side, I think there's a lot more work to be had.
I definitely agree. And that was actually my last question in terms of pig anemia, but I think you have really great insight. So I appreciate having this conversation today.
Yes, thank you so much.
So Tyler, before we go to our traditional end and turning the tables, I did want to kind of break out a little bit more for the audience who maybe hasn't followed the Coffee and Careers and Animal Science. And I kind of wanted to first say that I'm very proud of you, Tyler. You have watched you develop and mentor you through your PhD and your graduate studies. It's been an honor and excited to see that you're starting out very similar to my path in the industry and working with Combat Feeds. And I'm just really happy that, you know, taking on the torch and finding a young person as yourself wanting to continue to do sow research and research to answer some of these questions that maybe don't seem as sexy to business development managers and sales managers on things, but really important for our industry. But I was kind of hoping you could share your background in coffee and careers in animal science and how you felt it helped you through graduate school and then into your career transition today.
Yeah, so coffee and careers in animal science was really great. I think if I remember correctly, it came about right in the heat of COVID. So it was very good in a sense that it gave me an opportunity to socialize in a time where it was kind of hard to socialize. But at the same time, it gave me a lot of opportunity to network. And it opened my eyes to networking and how important networking is. The people that are a part of it, not every single one of them you'll deal with in the future, but most of them you will. These are the people you're going to be working with if you stay in this field throughout your career. So you might as well go ahead and get acquainted with them and, you know, just network. You really taught me and kind of beat it into my head. No one's going to network for you, so you have to stand out there and do it yourself. I needed that wake-up call almost. I found that coffee and careers was essential in my development in different aspects, but for sure, getting out of my comfort zone and networking with other colleagues in the industry and just, you know, hearing what other people that have other backgrounds, what their problems or what things they're seeing, what they've had success with and what they haven't had success with. Just sharing knowledge is very powerful. And I really appreciated that opportunity in coffee and careers.
Well, thank you. And before we switch gears, I just want to thank the sponsors of Coffee and Careers. It would not have been possible without the companies of Continental Search and Dan Simmons and Trish there, and then NutriQuest with Rob Musser really supporting me, and now he's the Elanco part, and then of course IFF with Janet Remus, and then Anna DeSoso, which is now at EW Nutrition, but had several volunteers, several mentors come on, and it was really nice to see that I wasn't the only one wanting to help the future and the next generation succeed. So it was just as much enjoyable for me to run that program, and I'm still not giving up on the program, but it's taking a little different course of action at the moment. And I'm still mentoring students like Caitlin and our Jerry there at South Dakota State University. So there is still some of that going behind the scenes, but for tradition, before we go, I'm going to let you turn the table and leave us with any last minute advice for Caitlin or ask her a question.
Yeah, I would like to ask Caitlin a question because it's not every day you get to talk to someone who has a passion about iron and anemia in swine, sows, pigs. So I guess it's a pretty general question, but you've done quite a bit of work to this point with the iron status of sows, but are there any, you know, couple key takeaways that you've seen, and it doesn't have to be a data point, but it could be just a subjective observation that you've noticed just by looking at the data in a grand scheme or just by being on the farm taking the sample. But do you have any key takeaways from your time spent with iron and anemia in pigs?
Yeah, so I started this hemoglobin trial here at South Dakota State, and I started with a group of gilts, and I still have those gilts. They're now just about to enter late gestation for their parity 3. So I've been with these gilts for almost 3 litters now, and, you know, before coming here and starting my master's, I didn't have any production experience. I come from a show pig background, and so it was all new to me. And so starting this trial, which, you know, I wasn't quite sure how passionate I'd become about it, but I'm very passionate about it. You can probably ask anyone that I go to school with. All I talk about is hemoglobin. So, yeah, I would say spending time in the barn with these sows the past year, I have noticed, you know, they're kind of, I don't want to say they've declined in terms of just from gilts all the way till parity three. I've seen their decline in terms of, I guess, overall health, and my subjective opinion on, you know, I guess how they're feeling. You can just tell an anemic sow does not feel good. And so for me, I guess realizing that there's a problem, and, you know, of course I want to fix it. It's not something I can fix, but I guess for me, just realizing that there is a problem, and I'm just currently evaluating that problem, but there's definitely a problem. And, you know, besides the data, just subjectively being with the sows, you can just tell.
Yeah, that's awesome. Those are the key. Those to me are the key takeaways. You know, they're not going to get you a paper published or anything, but being able to see the animal and take those measurements and just get those, you know, observations, those are so important. And I think we often forget that visual observations are, you know, they're not going to make a pretty table in a pretty publication, but they tell a story, and the researchers that see those animals and take those measurements, there's a lot of value to that.
Well, you both gave incredible insights to this, and here we always used to think, well, maybe they're just tired of being moms, you know, raising 12 kids at a time takes a lot. But really, if we tie human nutrition and sow nutrition together, it's really not a far reach. And I think, you know, you talked about blood volume and growth. Well, think about that, what we're doing to our sows. They're growing more fetuses. We're still, asking them to produce as much as quickly as possible. So it's like they're not getting a break. So I think it's could be the same problem. And maybe that is the research gap of what is the true benefit of injecting iron into sows, or giving her maybe a different oral product that we do with the piglets. And would that have value? Because I know giving 200 mils per sow, that would cause, to me, a lot of bad things. That's where toxic levels of iron could come in. If you were dosed with that in one injection, and giving sow shots, you're not going to do it multiple days in a row. She knows you're coming. So that would be, to me, where I see the, you know, Caitlin, you said you want to fix the problem. Well, we know we have a problem. So what are some things we can do to fix it? And I think that's the research gap we're missing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's amazing because, you know, these sows, they are tired. I mean, I can't imagine giving birth. And then secondly, I couldn't imagine doing it to 16 pigs or 16 people, I guess. But yeah, they're tired, but they're physiologically undergoing some massive changes. I mean, anyone that's looked at sow body weight knows that. I mean, you can have a change of 100 pounds in a very short period of time, and usually it's a loss of 100 pounds. That physiologically does numbers, I'm sure, on different things.
Well, thank you again, Tyler and Caitlin, for A, Caitlin hosting, and Tyler B, being our guest. It was great to have you, and hopefully we can connect on further episodes of what Combat Feeds is working on from a research perspective in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to coming back and being a part of this amazing show.
It was nice talking with you, Tyler. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin.